This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
I believe in societal norms.
The clock struck six. It meant one thing.
I said already, Don, it was embarrassing. Don't scream at me on the show.
Don't defend them.
It was horrifying.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's Andrew Gundling.
You couldn't possibly understand the hurt.
And ENN Tonight is brought to you by Deep Eddy Vodka. Please day drink responsibly. Peter has the day off. Andrew Gundling filling in for him here on ENN. And we start ENN. You know what? Let's start with some semi-uncomfortable hellos. Let's say hello first to Michael.
Don has definitely thought about Dan Grasso nude.
Oh. And hello to Don.
I've never had a dream about Dan.
Leave that out there.
We'll get to the rest of the hellos for a second, but Dan, do you find it weird that Michael has a problem with us being friends? Is there anything abnormal about our relationship?
I think the abnormality is him having a problem with it to the extent that he allegedly does. That's where the abnormality lies. Like, I just don't understand what the issue would be. Now, first of all, let's set the record straight. I know that I guess people have fun, ha-ha, over the whole thing, and, you know, it's good fodder for the show, and why shouldn't it be? But realistically, okay, in the last two calendar years, right, since the beginning of 2020, how many times have we actually seen each other in the flesh?
Twice.
I think three times. Two or three.
My
and
aunt's
third
funeral.
One, right, oh, yeah, and that's where all the kids like to hang out these days.
We went to a Patriots game.
Somerset Patriots game. Right.
And then the softball.
And the softball. So three times in the last 2 years. It's not like we're spending every weekend together. Is that what the perception is? You have a life. I have a life. Yeah. I work. You work. I have a family. You have a family.
Andrew.
Dan, you don't even need to be defensive about it. Like, so if you did spend every weekend together, what would be wrong with that?
That's fine, too.
You're close friends. Who cares?
You're absolutely right. And when Don and I converse, we use the two form since we know each other so well.
Informal.
Informal. Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly. Nothing wrong with it.
No, I agree. I've never really understood it either. All right, guys, let's start with some Jets. Good news for them, actually. They finally have Quinnen Williams back on the practice field. He's been activated off the PUP list, having recovered from offseason foot surgery. Met the media earlier today and said he can still become a much better player than what we've seen from him so far.
I ain't did nothing yet. Like, I feel like I ain't scratched the surface. I feel like I'm still learning. Like, from year one to year two, man, went by so fast, and I learned so much from year one to year two that I feel like I haven't scratch the surface. Like, going back to, like, man, I just redid my whole entire stance all the way over. Like, you learn that in, like, literally, you know what I'm saying? Like, how to get in the stance, stuff like that. So for me to go and have to relearn how to get back in my stance so I can unleash the explosiveness that I have, like, the explosive trait, so I can be able to perform in this scheme well, like, that goes to tell you, like, I haven't scratched the surface on what I could become in this league and what I am.
I would think Jet fans would like to hear Quinnen Williams saying that he hasn't even scratched the surface yet, because he's pretty good as is.
That would be something, Dan, right? If we haven't scratched the surface on what he can do.
Last year, you think about how bad that team was. And that's not breaking news, how bad the Jets were. He was clearly the lone bright spot. He really took a quantum leap in his second year, which is what you hope all second-year players make. And he was a disruptor. Think about it. On a bad team, bad defense, this was a guy. He should have gotten Pro Bowl consideration, if the Pro Bowl means anything. Maybe even, like, second-team All-Pro consideration. He had a better season, better numbers than guys who did make the Pro Bowl at that position. And it has to do with reputation and that sort of thing. And really, as a whole, guys, this defensive line, like, this could be one of the strengths of the football team. And you know what I mean? You throw him into the mix. Let's not forget how good a player Sheldon Rankins was during his Saints days. Carl Lawson, and that's the guy that everybody's been talking about. Carl Lawson has been unblockable at camp, even for Mekhi Becton, unblockable. That guy might be the long-awaited answer to the Jets' edge pass rusher problems, which they've had pretty much since John Abraham left town. So this defensive line, it could be pretty, pretty scary this year, I think.
Staying with the Jets, kind of. No surprise among Jet fans watching this from afar as the Seahawks' contract battle with Jamal Adams continues to play out. So it appears right now that things are kind of locked in a stalemate. Seattle's prepared to let Adams play out the final year of his rookie deal. Then I guess the plan is for them to slap the franchise tag on him both next year and the following year. This is now reading from Pro Football Talk about how Adams is prepared to combat that move. They say, per a league source, Adams would file a grievance arguing that he's a linebacker, not a safety, for franchise tag purposes. The question then becomes whether Adams takes more snaps as a linebacker, inside or outside, or as a safety in 2021, the year before application of the tag. The financial consequences would be significant. The projected 2022 franchise tag for safeties is $13.5 million. For linebackers, inside or outside, doesn't matter, they're lumped together, it's almost $18 million. So a significant financial difference. There is recent precedent for this. The Buccaneers did it. Linebacker Shaq Barrett challenged the defensive end tag. He eventually picked up another $1.32 million. So this should be a fun one for Seahawks coaches to navigate, as the front office won't want to see him at lined up at linebacker. Adams won't want to line up at safety. That sounds a lot of fun for those guys.
Does it sound a little deja vu-ish to you guys? Like maybe the people in Florham Park and maybe were around Jamal Adams for a few years, or maybe now looking at this from afar and saying, yeah, we kind of know what this is all about. Right? I mean, it's like shades of his time with the Jets, and the Seahawks are learning it out the hard way. I mean, to think about what they gave up, two first-round picks for a safety, no less. A safety, which still didn't net them a playoff win, by the way. And now they don't even have this guy under contract yet. Going into his walk year, I mean, this deal is looking better and better and better and better for the Jets with each passing day, Don.
It was so no-brainer. They did the right thing. It was a great deal. Seattle did what they thought they had to do. They thought they had a Super Bowl team. They didn't. Now they inherited the problems the Jets were trying to get rid of. And it goes back to Maccagnan taking him sixth overall. If you're not going to pay the guy, then what are you drafting him that high for? But that was Maccagnan's problem and one of the reasons he probably lost his job. And now Seattle's got to figure it out. I don't see how he's going to be able to claim he's a linebacker. They would have to really break down to see he played. There's no way he played more plays in that area than at safety. Listen, he's a heck of a player, but
well, that's the weird thing about the Maccagnan pick that you mentioned is that, okay, maybe it was a mistake because now if he's good, you have to devote a lot of money to a position you don't want to. But like, you can't say Maccagnan was wrong in his evaluation. I mean, the player is tremendous.
Right.
It's just, I guess, the consequence of that position being a great player.
Right, but then if Maccagnan ended up being right because of how good a player he is, you know, Maccagnan never got a chance because he ended up getting fired, but was Maccagnan going to pay him that big-time money, and can you afford to do that at that position when you still had, at that time, a defensive line to build and still having to go out and get corners? So I know he's a special player, but it's unfortunate. It's like same with Saquon with the Giants. It's just that's the position. And so, the Giants are going to have to give Saquon the money because he was the second overall pick. And the guy that gives him the contract was the one that drafted him, well, so it's a little bit of a different situation. But this, when you're in a salary cap sport and you got to slot positions, it's tough at the safety position to do that.
The problem with Jamal is when he was here, remember, he kind of gave off mixed signals. You never knew, like, which story you wanted to believe. Because remember, his first big thing was, remember, when the team was losing, he went off on, oh, we need some dogs in this locker room. I'm tired of the losing. I'm a winner. And by the way, he's won nothing in his life. Never won at LSU a national championship. I don't, if he's talking about what he won in high school, congratulations. But he never won anything in the NFL. But that being said, first it was, I want to be on a winner. Then it was, oh, I'll sign a contract with the Jets. If the Jets want to give me money, absolutely. I'll give them the extension. Sure, I'd love to be here. Then it became a money issue. So it's like you never know which way the wind blows with this guy. A safety who's horrible in pass coverage. Horrible. Horrible. He's a box safety. This isn't Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu we're talking about. He's a real good player, yes, but he's not a guy that I'm giving up the farm to keep him happy.
No, you're right. However, I will say that he does in some ways, I get what he's saying in wanting to be considered a linebacker for franchise tag purposes. And I don't know that he is a linebacker, but he is kind of the human embodiment of the flaw of the system because he is a true hybrid. He had 9.5 sacks last year. So he's, you know, he's not strictly a safety, he's not strictly a linebacker, but he in this system he's got to be slotted in as one of those positions, and it's maybe it doesn't quite apply to him. So I don't know what you do if you just take like the average of linebackers and safeties.
Remember Leonard Williams was going through the same thing. Remember, yeah. Like it was defensive end versus defensive tackle because DNs get paid more money than defensive tackles do. Like I remember he went through the same thing in his back and forth.
Yeah. Let's see. While we're talking about football, Don, I know you had mentioned earlier that you wanted to see what the ratings were for the football game. When was it? Saturday night compared to the baseball games?
Yes.
And you have it, I believe.
I have it. So now there's a little bit of a discrepancy because in one of the games the rating was higher, but the number of viewers was lower. So you want to go rating or the actual number of viewers? Because I don't understand how something can have less viewers and a higher rating. I don't know how all that works. So why don't we just go by sheer number of viewers?
Okay.
So rank them for me.
Human sets of eyes on the sets.
Dan, go first. Give me 1 through 3. Saturday, Jets, Giants, Yankees, White Sox, Mets, Dodgers. Mets, Dodgers was on PIX, Yankees, White Sox on YES, and Giants, Jets was on Channel 4.
Now, you gotta refresh my memory. What time were the Yankees?
Yankees were at 7, Mets were at 7, and the Giants, Jets were at 7:30. So everything was pretty much even.
I'm going to say, as crazy as it sounds, I'm saying football 1, Yankees 2, Mets 3.
Andrew?
It takes away the drama of it, but that would be the same order that I would have.
All right, so by sheer number of viewers, coming in at number 3 with 287,000 average viewers, Yankees, White Sox on YES.
Really? Maybe that's the YES component there with the cable.
Coming in at number 2 at 295,000 viewers, Mets, Dodgers on PIX.
There you go.
Coming in number 1, and this is why things will never change, and we're all suckers because we love football like it's a drug. Coming in at number 1 with 383,000 viewers.
That's football!
Jets and Giants. So
that's
almost 100,000 more people watched the Giants, Jets over Yankees, White Sox, Mets, Dodgers.
But more combined baseball viewers that night than football.
True. But still,
a
glorified walkthrough.
Glorified
you
walk-through.
Can't say that the baseball was meaningless. I mean, those were great. Those are great matchups. You know, playoff teams battling for position with Yankees, White Sox, Mets, Dodgers, and so the rating wise, Giants, Jets did a 3.42, Yankees did a 3.18, and then the Mets did a 2.85. So,
well, a couple of weeks ago, Hall of Fame game. Which was NBC, or no, it was on this year was on Fox because NBC still had the Olympics during the Hall of Fame game. That had over 7 million viewers. Now, that was Cowboys Steelers. Those are two flagship franchises. They got fans all over the globe. So that wasn't really that surprising. And by comparison, 7 million plus for a Hall of Fame exhibition preseason game. Remember we talked about the Field of Dreams baseball game earlier in the show? That did over 5 million. And that was a national TV audience on Fox.
And I know Michael's argument always is, well, the gambling element of it. Although I don't really know how much that plays because people can bet baseball very easily with now the FanDuel and the DraftKings and the BetMGM and everything. But really, honestly, if you're betting preseason football, go to the bottom of the website and call that 1-800-GAMBLER number because you got a problem, my friend.
How do you know who's playing? How do you? It's just, it's unbelievable.
I'm almost surprised that it's even offered as a possibility.
I don't even know how you come up with it. Like, who could have known? Like, the Giants made it known very early that they were not starting their guys. But, like, how do you formulate a number? Who knows any of these players to know how they're going to play in this game? Like, how could you have factored in? I know they did, but factor in the over-under. Factor in, like, who's going to be favored? How do they do it?
Yeah,
it's incredible to me. But you know what? I use the phrase aesthetically pleasing because that's what there's something. And Andrew, you know, because you're a football guy too. Just seeing the game on television, it captivates you. You get caught up in it. I mean, it's a great television sport.
No, like you said, we are addicted to football.
No,
as a nation.
It's such a bummer, too. You know what I mean? Just like with these guys, you want to see these guys out there, and you want to fast forward and get to the regular season as soon as possible when you are going to see these players. Like yesterday, Carolina was playing Indianapolis, so it would have been Sam Darnold. You know, our buddy Sam. We know Sam. I want to see how Sam's doing here with his new team. Standalone game, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was on NFL Network. I set the DVR like a couple of days earlier. All right, I'm going to watch that game. I want to see how Sam does. Carolina decides, Sam's not playing. Neither is pretty much everybody else on offense that's starting. I'm like, all right, well, goodbye. Why am I watching?
Yeah. Let's see. Dan, you mentioned just a moment ago the Field of Dreams game and how well that rated. I'm reading here from Awful Announcing. They posted this earlier today. On Monday, Peacock announced that it had ordered a scripted series based on Field of Dreams, written and executive produced by Mike Schur. Little has been revealed about the series other than, quote, it will reimagine the mixture of family, baseball, Iowa, and magic that makes the movie so enduring and beloved. I will say if Mike Schur is doing it, I imagine it'll be good. He's the co-creator of Parks and Rec. He was a writer and producer on The Office. By the way, he had a very small role on The Office. He was,
Who was he?
He was Moe's, Dwight's cousin.
He was also in Better Call Saul, correct?
Yeah, I believe he was.
The one with the baseball cards. Remember, like, the baseball, they stole my baseball card collection? The guys, remember?
He played right.
Like a dorky guy. Yeah.
So this should be interesting. I mean, this has become a thing now, like the reboot of, you know, like Cobra Kai for Karate Kid. And I think there was a Mighty Ducks reboot on Disney Plus.
That was terrible.
Oh, was it? I didn't see it.
You know what? If you are 5 years old, it might suit you. It was really like for children.
And I don't know if I've ever brought this up on the Michael Kay Show. It's come up a few times on my Game Misconduct podcast. And you know hockey's in my blood, and I love hockey to death. Never watched one of the Mighty Duck movies.
Oh, because
I mean, maybe like we were talking about with The Sandlot earlier, it just kind of missed you time-wise in life.
It missed.
Well, you know, it's funny, Andrew. You know what I want to say? If they're going to make a Field of Dreams spinoff, like a series. Do you remember? And by the way, when we were talking about sports movies earlier, like I was getting a lot of stuff on Twitter that people were writing me, A League of Their Own.
Oh,
very, very good baseball movie.
Great movie, yeah.
Don, do you remember? Andrew was probably a little younger. Don, do you remember they actually rolled out a League of Their Own sitcom like that fall following the movie which came out in the summer? It lasted like five episodes and then they never saw it again because who the hell wants to watch a sitcom based on that movie?
No, but yeah, that's...
That's oversaturation.
Yes.
And I'm afraid this might be too. Great movie. Great movie.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Guys, a couple Yankee updates. Luis Severino had his MRI today. Aaron Boone didn't want to say any more about it until Severino had a chance to meet with doctors. Read into that, I guess, however you want. Also, Clint Frazier has been transferred to the 60-day IL. He pulled himself out of last night's rehab game knowing that he wasn't feeling right. Boone said that he had courage to do so. Boone was also asked if Frazier will even be able to play again, and his answer was not encouraging. He said, we'll see. He's been through a lot, seeing a lot of people and a lot of testing, so we'll just try to continue to follow and support him where we can. As of right now, he's in a little bit of a holding pattern.
Yeah, this was something that was originally thought to be vertigo, right?
Right.
And I just feel terrible for him. Yeah. That would just be amazing if he just doesn't play again. Oh, that just that
just hasn't been able to like catch a break, it seems like. You know what I mean? It's really bad, man. You feel bad for that guy.
Yeah, really do. Let's see. Cool moment over the weekend in baseball when Tyler Gilbert pitched a no-hitter for the Diamondbacks in his first career start. Here is what it sounded like on Bally Sports Arizona.
Center field. Marte!
Yeah!
It's a no-hitter!
It's the fourth time a pitcher has done it in his first career start, and two of those occasions happened in the 1890s. The last one happened in 1953 when Bobo Holloman did it.
Oh, listen, everybody loved Bobo.
Bobo Holloman.
I thought
he was a teen idol back in the day.
I thought A-Rod was spot on last night when the Met game got out of the way. So him and Vasgersian were doing a talk show at this point, and they were talking about the Gilbert no hitter. And I thought A-Rod was very poignant when he said, "You know what's great about baseball is that there's probably some 26, 27 year old in the minor leagues who saw that and said, you know what, I'm going to keep going. Maybe I can be that guy." Instead of quitting and saying it's never going to happen for me, maybe that's the inspiration for me to work a little harder and try. And that's a great story. It really is. And off the bat, I would have bet any amount of money that was a base hit.
So it's funny you say that because – and it is a great story. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. But it felt like a little bit of luck might have been on Gilbert's side. So San Diego was 0-for-10 on hard-hit balls. The most without a hit across MLB this season for hard hits. And the final out that you just mentioned, the line out to center, it actually had a 75% hit probability, according to StatCast. So off the bat, you were not alone. The probability actually tells you that that was leaning towards being a hit.
Listen, you need a lot of luck for a no-hitter. When you watch baseball games and you see these broken bat singles and infields, like pure mistakes by the hitter, like find a way to be a hit. And for you to be able to go nine innings without allowing one, as skill as it is, there's a lot of luck that needs to be involved.
Yeah. That'll do it for ENN tonight, which is brought to you by Deep Eddie Vodka. Deep Eddie Vodka is 10 times distilled and made in small batches. Taste the difference for yourself. Please day drink responsibly.
Doesn't he do a great job, Dan?
Tremendous.
You know, I really enjoy when he does
simple, easy, flows, keeps the conversation going. He knows what he's a pro. He knows what he's doing.
He is a pro, and he's going to be doing it for the next 3 days because Peter's not back until Friday. So, Dan, this was a pleasure. As always, it was like we took one of our phone calls and just expanded it out to 4.5 hours.
That's what it was. Long time.
Hopefully we'll have
Dan. It was great. Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Chris Carlin's coming up next. This is the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.